Good morning, wonderful listeners. You've tuned into Post Session Podcast, a podcast filled with the stoke of a surf session and the wise guidance of an ocean voyager. Your water-loving hosts are ready to share this infectious state of mind while encouraging and inspiring you
for your next adventure.
Abacha!
Recording.
Welcome, Post Session Podcast friends. We are here today with, well, it's Ashley and I in studio.
Alone.
Yeah, at the house studio. And then we have a visitor on Zoom, and I'm going to let Ashley introduce our special guest.
Well, listeners, we're here today with Nate Mad Dog Leaser. Nate is my buddy. We learned, when did we became friends through freediving. We're both,
yeah, you were my first instructor.
Yeah, see? I taught him everything he knows.
Yeah.
2015.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh, Nate, I don't even remember that.
So you could say everything he knows he learned from you, and I could say everything I know about freediving I learned from you, but that's two completely different pictures.
That does paint two completely different pictures. I have a wide range of talents. Sometimes I hit the mark, like with Nate, and sometimes I completely miss, like with Laurel. So Nate and I have been freediving buddies for a long time. He runs Blue Alchemy Freediving. He trains mermaids. He does all kinds of weird stuff.
Oh.
All kinds of emergency management diving, too. Like, oh, okay. First of all, I should tell everybody that Nate's in law enforcement, and that's why he's here today.
Wow.
Because we want to talk to him, a real-life law enforcement officer, about the state of affairs.
Popo.
But he does weird stuff, too. For instance, he will scuba dive at the bottom of dark rivers and things like that where you can't see anything for dead bodies.
Oh, what happened to the Zoom picture?
Are you still there?
reconnecting.
Are you there, Nate?
Just when Nate got very interesting.
Recording in progress.
Oh, you're back.
Yeah, we're not sure what happened there.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. You guys are talking, then you just disappeared on me. I've been a slacker.
Well, did I represent you correctly that you do weird stuff like dive down and look for bodies in rivers?
Yeah, that sounds not accurate, actually. I mean, that's one of the many talents.
So, you know, possibly in the background of a shot in Dateline, Nate might be diving, searching for a body.
But here's the thing with Nate. When you meet him, he's very kind of happy-go-lucky, friendly guy, goofball-ish. You know what I'm saying, Nate.
That sounds not accurate.
Yeah, he's like 6'6". I mean, come on.
I could tell he's tall. But he's like, he needs that sunroof open just to sit up all
I know. Day. He's like McGill and Gorilla in that sucker.
There's a sunroof open.
But then he's got this weird dark side where he does this, I don't know, dead body stuff. I don't know.
Well, I mean, we're going to talk about that. So that's something that listeners that we're getting ready to dive into eventually is just kind of get into the mind of how you manage all the stuff that goes into being a part of law enforcement. What's it like today?
Yeah.
That's a big deal question.
That's a big deal. That's why we got our boy here.
But let's start off.
Deep question.
Yeah. With how we normally start the podcast with some post-session notes. Nate, what have you been doing in the water lately? Have you been out?
Not anywhere near enough. It's been a while. Most of the pools are still kind of iffy about having people here. Little bit of training with a buddy here and there, but not much. And I haven't actually been in a decent deep free dive since May.
Okay. So,
what is decent deep to you?
Over 50, 60 meters.
Dang. Wow. That's deep.
Dang.
He's hardcore.
Yeah, he's hardcore.
I don't want to hear it, Ashley. I know better.
It is deep, though.
Yeah.
It is deep. Like, you're like a one percenter in the population.
All right, Ash, do you have some post-session notes this week?
Looks like you wrote me one. That's the injustice of the week. Okay. Post-session notes. Let's see. Same as Nate, having a lot of trouble with the pools around here. I'm actually training a guy and showed up at the pool and they wouldn't let us in and all this other junk. It's like,
because of COVID.
Yeah, it's real strict with COVID rules. And then anywhere I go, they treat me as a commercial establishment. Like, I can't just go with a friend and train. They're like, oh, you're teaching, blah, blah, blah. And they want to charge me all this money. And it's just crazy. So I'm trying to get in at UNCW. What'd you say?
I said, I hate that.
It's super lame. I mean, it comes from just having no understanding of what we're really doing and whatever. So
Nate, are you also training to be a freedive instructor, or is he?
He is.
You already are. Wow.
Yeah.
He's gone all the way, baby.
Maybe I'll have better luck with him as an instructor.
So
just kidding.
Whatever. I guess my post-session notes are just like Nate's. Not a lot of water time. Cold. Everybody's uptight. I've been jogging though.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's real good.
My good friend Jane Renault has been encouraging me because she's a big runner and a diver. So
that's cool.
Yeah, but you know what I have to do is absorb so much of her time just to stay motivated. So every day I'm texting, oh, this is what I did. You know, and I'm sure it's totally obnoxious, but
hey,
I need accountability big time. Don't I, Laurel?
Yeah.
I understand that one.
Yeah.
So for my post-session notes, instead of looking at this past week, I'm going to look ahead to next week, because next week, next Friday, I will be in the Caribbean. Hallelujah. And
guess what I'll be doing?
Getting some warm wet. What will you be doing?
Watching your dog.
It's true. So I'm looking forward to next week enjoying some warm water and getting some warm waves.
You're going to be so happy.
I can't wait.
It's going to be so amazing. I miss my traveling days.
Well, here's the thing. If you've listened to our past episode, I got COVID. I still have congestion, which is a big whatever, which I'd like to wash with salt water, of course, but it's so cold. I don't want to get my head wet. So I'm just taking Sudafed till we get to Puerto Rico.
Yeah, use the neti pot, right, Nate?
I've neti potted for weeks, twice a day.
Okay.
So here's the other one. I know Ashley taught you tables, right? Do a CO2 table. That'll clear you out real quick.
Okay.
But she don't remember that.
I don't.
She didn't pay attention.
I wasn't going to admit it. Thanks for calling me out. Okay. Well, speaking
advice,
of
Nate.
Being called out, which is an injustice in itself. How about, just curious, Nate, did you bring an injustice of the week? Because if not, we have backup. But
I don't know if I have a really good injustice, just a general observation from a law enforcement standpoint that drives me insane.
Please,
it's not just a weekly thing. It's an always thing. And I think it's just a life thing.
Okay.
Where people get so ingrained in their ways, absolutely right, and no one else, they can't see it anybody else's way. And because of that, we get into these conflicts and nobody can ever just say, hey, you know what? I don't agree with you. And I'm not saying I'm wrong. I just don't agree with you. But you can have your opinion. You can see things the way you want to without me deciding that I have to hate you because you don't agree with me.
I love this injustice.
Yeah.
And it's a big one.
Absolutely.
It's a big one that I think is is destroying the fabric of our lives.
Yeah.
Because people are so passionate and have elevated opinions with the way it is. Like, when once you've said, not only is it my opinion, it's the way we should be living, and if you don't, you're jeopardizing people's lives, you're whatever it is. Now, I'm not saying
you're talking about the vaccine, aren't you?
Well, the vaccine or a mask or whatever, but
anything,
but you can elevate anything. I'm not saying that there's not life and death situations. There are. But if you can't have a conversation about opinions and accept that someone or find common ground, even despite different opinions, let's find common ground where that I would not cut you off, like eliminate you from my circle of because of your opinion.
Well, one of the problems I think that happens in conversation is that instead of somebody just assuming, okay, this person might have a different background, or maybe their parents were Republican, so they have this kind of deeper understanding, or Democrat, whatever it is. I think...
Or even age, you know?
Right. Age makes a big difference.
Sure.
Big difference. But automatically, somebody that is so steadfast in their thinking will assume that the other person is stupid. It's not even that they have a different opinion. It's like, that person's an idiot. They don't get it. And they don't understand.
And sometimes they are.
Yeah, but sometimes they're not. In, for instance, I think about age. I talk to some older people, you know, now where I think, oh my gosh, how could they be so fooled? How could they think that? And then I back up and go, wait a minute, they have this lifetime of experience. Mm-hmm. And they were on the other side. Mm-hmm. They might have been activists or doing this or doing that. But, you know, you get jaded, you get worn down, or you get realistic, whatever the angle is. Mm-hmm. And things change. Yeah.
And I could still, even if we have different opinions. Well, is there a recent example for you that you want to share?
Yeah.
I don't have a specific recent example. I just, these are like the fights I go to when I'm dealing with people. It's like, well, they said this or she said this and I'm right because of X, Y, and Z. I mean, the disorderlies, the domestics, a lot of this stuff is just lack of people wanting to be able to communicate and being able to acknowledge that someone else does have a different opinion. And we don't have to agree on an opinion.
Oh, I love
that's
that.
That's the thing.
You know what? I don't want to segue yet and to dive deeper. We don't have to, but this is a perfect segue because I was going to ask Nate today if he thought that there needed to be, instead of the burden of responsibility being on Nate, not only to manage, let's say you go into a domestic situation, not just to manage the violence that's happening and diffuse the situation that way, but should the burden of responsibility be on you to be the mediator also, or should there be another party there that's in charge of that? Because that's kind of where the defunding thing happened, right?
Mm-hmm. So it's funny. There's both there. I mean, I get, at least where I work, I'm not going to officially say where I am, but where I work in law enforcement, it is expected for the officer to be a little bit of the counselor, mm-hmm. a little bit of that problem solver. I mean, we're expected to do all of it. Mm-hmm. We do have groups that go out for mental health that will respond out and try to work with that. Someone who's actually an expert in the field, right? Not mm-hmm. not someone who's got some base training.
Right.
But overall, I do think that people, before it's getting to the point where you're calling us, you need to be maybe reaching out like, hey, there are problems. Maybe we need to talk to a counselor at the church, talk to a professional therapist, talk to somebody who's not going to be
You're right, dude.
Being one side
she
or the
sucks.
Other.
You know, like your friend.
Yeah, exactly.
Your friend that's just going to agree with you and not pose the other side.
Yeah. And that just puts you in your own echo chamber. So what you already think is now just being echoed back at you. So you dig deeper in instead of someone saying, hey, okay, I hear what you're saying, but do you hear what they're saying? Mm-hmm. And vice versa, because if you both can hear each other and at least validate the other person's opinion, not agreeing, just validating that I acknowledge that you think this, you can at least have a conversation.
It's called active listening, folks, where you repeat back what the other person says. So one, they feel heard, and two, it gives a pause before you respond, and it kind of prevents that, okay, I'm not really listening because I've got my comeback, I've put it in order, and you're going to feel so stupid when I lay this one on you.
Well,
it's hard to do, though. It's very hard to do, but you're spot on. I'm going to say this next, but what you just said, like, hey, summarizing back what they said, letting them know they were heard. So that way you had to take the time to say, okay, you just said this. Now I can respond instead of just, oh, I'm arguing this way.
Because then you never feel heard. And so that just elevates your frustration level.
Well, I have a question. This situation you're talking about right now where people aren't listening to each other, are you thinking specifically that, you know, because I'm sure that there's some situations that are very black and white. He was slapping her. That's the end. But in the bigger picture.
Maybe it's not the end.
Well, you know, you got to squelch that behavior,
yeah,
right?
Sure,
not
sure,
try
sure.
to
yeah.
analyze
that,
it.
That's a no-no. That's never a
right, right. We're already past negotiating. Anyway, are you thinking specifically about some of these bigger issues, like where there's, you know, some protest and rioting going on, and then the other side comes in yeah. and they're pushing against each other, and it's obvious to you, maybe from your perspective, that nobody's listening at all.
And that's always what it comes down to. And yeah, it's exactly that. It's not just a domestic, it's a disorderly, it's an argument. Any discussion where we have two opposing viewpoints, I always feel that if you can't hear what the other party's saying, there's not a discussion then. We're not talking, it's you yelling and me yelling back. Mm-hmm. This isn't going to be cathartic for either one of us. Mm-hmm. You're going to be stressed, I'm going to be stressed, we're both going to be angry, and we're going to both entrench ourselves more.
Yeah.
Versus, and it, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying, oh my God, this is the easy solution, but at some point someone does have to say, okay, I hear that you're saying this. Can you also appreciate where I'm coming from too? And unless both parties are willing to do that, unless you can have some give and take, there's not a conversation. Yep. If one party's saying, oh yeah, no, I hear you, and the other party's saying, but I don't want to listen to your side either, it's going to lead just down a rabbit hole. There's no good answer for it.
So let's say two things here. Number one, you can't just say, I hear you, and not repeat it back, because
that's
going to be like, yeah. I hear you. Blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. I'm curious, like, what would you say if you had to ballpark percentage of the things that you deal with on a daily basis in law enforcement, how much would active listening, or what would be the percentage that if that were employed, or if it was, you know, that it's not employed and this is, leads to this, like, of your job?
So you're kind of asking, like, if people were actively employing active listening, number of calls wouldn't I be getting called to?
Kind of yeah. Thing.
Yeah. I couldn't give a good percentage, but I can tell you that a majority of my calls throughout a day tend to deal with disorderlies, where it's like, okay, what about this solution? That's literally playing mediator. I would say that out of my job, 90% of my job is being able to talk to people and help de-escalate things.
Wow.
Hey.
I'm a crime scene, or I guess a CIT officer, so crisis intervention training. So that means employing active listening skills to de-escalate. So CIT, crisis intervention.
Okay.
So it's one of these programs. They teach officers active listening skills to de-escalate issues, to de-escalate. This one's specifically for mental health, but it still applies across the board.
So you're saying 90%
the majority
of the things
that's over 50.
That's a lot.
Well, I have a question. Remember that call where the kid was selling lemonade too aggressively, or how did you de-escalate that?
Tell us the story, please.
Okay, so I was actually talking to Ashley. A year ago?
I know,
It was a while ago, right?
Yeah.
And I guess somebody called up and yelled, called the police, because young children were selling lemonade that they felt they were selling it too aggressively. They approached their car and asked if you want to buy lemonade. These are like young kids. These aren't like teenagers jumping on your vehicle here.
Right.
These are
like 9-year-olds.
Young kids.
Oh.
Yeah. Asking, like, hey, buy lemonade, holding a sign.
Right.
So this guy, this person called up and just essentially got upset. Instead of just saying, hey, guys, you know what? Cool down a little bit. Don't approach the cars. Don't come near the road.
You're in
whatever.
The road. Get out of the road.
Yeah. Instead of addressing it with the kids to begin with.
Right.
Didn't want to address it with the kids. Knows where the kids live, because had no problem telling us where the parents live. Didn't want to address it with the parents. The solution was, let me just call the police so they can solve my problem.
Wow.
Yeah. Wham, wham, wham. And
it's one of these ones where when I grew up, I'll tell you right now, any adult, if I had done something like that, would have said, hey.
Yeah.
Mate. Knock it off. Get out of the road. Don't make me tell your parents. And that would have been the end of it. Yes, sir. Done. But That's a whole different topic. That's self-efficacy too, and responsibility and all that jazz.
That's crazy though. Well, that's such a tattletale.
Well, yeah, but also in the world today, you know, I think Ashley and I were talking about this earlier, mm-hmm. was, you know, parents today aren't cool with, it used to be okay to spank your neighbor's kids, but now you can't even talk to them gruff.
No.
Well, I tell people all the time, there's no law against how you speak to somebody. You can't put hands on them, but there's no law against how you speak to them.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to know.
So,
I'm going to ask another question.
Yeah.
This is a fairly broad question, but how do you feel about being a cop in today's climate, you know, where there's kind of this distrust, or anyway, a buzz of distrust? Obviously, not everybody distrusts law enforcement, but there is this buzz around it. And do you feel respected, and how is it?
Do you feel comfortable being a cop?
Yeah,
it can be hit or miss some days, to be perfectly honest. I mean, it's rough, and I have my cynical response that if I wanted to be loved, I would have been a firefighter. I say that right off the like, even when I first started law enforcement, I made that joke. I know it's not the job where people love you. You don't go to people when they're having a great day.
Right,
you're
right.
Dealing with law enforcement, it's because something went wrong. Either you did something wrong or somebody did something to you, so you're calling law enforcement out there. You're not having a great day. It's not your best day.
Mm-hmm.
So the job is already going to be kind of behind the eight ball in that case.
That's nice you acknowledge that and have that kind of.
He's no ding dong. He's no ding dong.
Yeah, it's but again, it's. I tell my rookies when they come on to when they first start when I'm training them that hey, listen, understand that your job isn't to dole out punishment. Your job isn't to have to have everybody love you. Your job is to go to a situation, de-escalate the situation, take enforcement action if needed, and that's it. You don't have to further punish, but like, okay, just because you're arresting someone, for example, doesn't mean you have to treat them like, oh my God, you're a dirtbag. Okay, cool, man.
Right.
I get it. I arrest you. You can agree with me or not. This is the law. This is why it's being enforced this way. And if you're polite with me, I'm obviously going to advocate for you at the magistrate saying, hey, yeah, he was polite with me the whole time. That I can't change your criminal history. I can't change the action that you've done. The only thing I have control of in this situation is how you and I choose to interact. And even if you're nasty to me the whole time, I can still be polite to you. I can still be courteous. Sometimes it wins people over. Sometimes they're like, you know, I still hate you. You're a cop. And it's like, I'm never going to change your mind on that one. But other guys are like, hey, you know what? I apologize. I shouldn't have been acting like that. I get that you're doing what you do. I appreciate you being cool with me. And that's like, that's a win right there in my opinion. The second I have someone that I've arrested, that I have in the back of my cruiser in handcuffs saying, hey, officer, you know what? It is what it is, but I at least appreciate you being respectful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is what's expected. That is what I expect from a professional law enforcement officer.
Mm-hmm.
Not to have to agree with everybody, but just to kind of do that. And I think if officers can get in that mindset, it makes our jobs easier for us instead of just realizing that everybody's out to fight. Yeah, I think when you do that, it's going to create, there's those conflicts. It's going to make it so the job is more stressful. Right. The job's not easy. Administrative staff makes it hard. Everything makes it hard. There's a lot going against you the whole time. But at the same time, I think law enforcement is more professional now than it has ever been in decades past.
Wow.
That's good.
That's not what media told me.
Well, exactly. That's the problem. But what the training that officers get now, I mean, I just told you, like, I'm a CIT trained officer because I'm learning mental health stuff. Well, I learned de-escalation techniques. Mm-hmm. This isn't stuff that was even being taught 10 years ago, let alone 20, 30 years ago.
Well, and they did have a, you know, I'm sure there's a lot involved, so I'm just toting this off of the news. But, you know, law enforcement shot a guy who they called the person called 911. He was having a mental health emergency. You might have heard about this in the news. But he's still on the phone with 911 when the cops show up, but he's got a knife in his hand as well. And so he went to attack. He injured a couple of the police, and then he got shot. It's terrible.
Yeah, and that's one of those situations that it's a lose-lose situation.
Yeah.
It's going to be a bad situation. The best thing you do is when you show up as law enforcement, my job is I have to de-escalate whatever the situation is. I have to neutralize whatever that situation is, and I can't let further people come to harm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If it's just you with a knife, you know what? Well, I'll have a standoff with you all day. If it's just you with a knife and I can get distance and cover where you're not a threat to me and you're just holding a knife, mm-hmm. you're not a threat to anybody else. And as long as it's just you, but mm-hmm. the second you are no longer a threat to just you and you become a threat to other people,
you have
then
an
my
obligation.
Action has to, yeah. Then the action has to be different there. That then I am on scene. I have an obligation to protect the other people at that point.
Knives mm-hmm. are dangerous too. Talita said somebody has a knife, you're going to get really hurt. Oh. You've got to, yep. if anyone has a knife, you've got to attack to kill that person because you are going to get seriously hurt. Or
distance
run away first. Run away first. Yeah, mm-hmm. that she did yeah. say that.
Well, again, I said, if I can get my cruiser between you and I can have distance away from you, I'm in a better situation. Mm-hmm. If I'm within a few feet of you, I'm in a bad situation. And I don't have time to, I don't have time to process my reaction.
Right.
There's only one reaction that you can have. Versus if I can get time and distance and cover, I have time to decide, hey, maybe I can do this differently. Maybe I can do this. Hey, maybe I can get this guy to stop. Maybe I can talk him into this. Mm-hmm. You have options.
I think
you lose
that,
you lose options.
I really appreciated what you said earlier about, you know, when you're training the newer guys and coaching them in not coming in with an attitude of, you know, expecting the worst or thinking that somebody needs to be punished or put in their place. Because even with working in mental health with kids, mm-hmm. I mean, I would talk to parents like, you're on your way home from work. You're already thinking, oh, this is going to suck when I get home. And mm-hmm. you come home with this attitude because you've heard from the school or whatever. So you're angry. And then you come into the situation as opposed to, you know, taking the moment to prep your mind before you go on a call. I mean, is there a process that you go through before you get a call, or do you just, you know, do what you're supposed to do? But
so do both. There is proactive policing, but I have an idea what I'm going into with proactive policing. With a call for service, all of a sudden computer pops up, boom, hey, respond to this call. What it says there may be what's happening. It also may be completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. So how these calls come in, they may be spot on. They may be way off the mark of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So you read it, go, okay, if it is this, what am I going to do? If it's this, what am I going to do? Hey, this call looks like it could be a little bit more dicey. Maybe I can provide a little bit more space. And I tell newer officers that you will get a gut feeling for some of them. I said, don't just say, oh, absolutely, I know for a fact it's going to be this, because mm-hmm. that's a recipe for disaster. That's complacency. But you can start saying, okay, if it's this, I have these options. If it's this, I can have these options. And this is just personally what works for me. I know some guys like, going to that call, I'm going to figure it out as I go. Mm. I like to go through my plays in my head a little bit just to...
You like to visualize.
Set myself up.
Mm-hmm. He's using his freediving tools.
Of course he is. You know what, Nate? Playing off what Laurel just said and what you just told us, I was thinking that it seems to me like a great recipe for success would be to take a lot of the subjectivity out of each officer's hands, which is impossible to do completely because you have to make decisions on the fly. But if you have a flow chart in your mind of which direction to go, depending on the situation, then every person's not going in blind making bad choices. They've already thought, okay, when I respond, if people are volatile, this is what I'm going to do. If they're not, this is what I'm going to do. And just flow chart that action.
So there is actually a kind of a flow chart with the like use of force. Every department, I guarantee, across the nation has something like that, a use mm-hmm. of force continuum. If you have this, this is what you can do. Otherwise, we're going to seek to de-escalate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's actually part of the recruit training now, is they talk about escalation and a de-escalation wheel. So not even just use of force, but once the situation is de-escalating, how we bring it down here, and then how if it needs to come back up, where it goes.
Right.
So it can go both ways, but just... It does have to keep that flexibility because, unfortunately,
there's too many variables.
A lot of calls are very variable and you don't know which way it's going to go. Mm-hmm. I could give you 40 different of the same type of call for service and every single one of them is not going to work the exact same way.
Yeah.
I'm
and they're always going to. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go.
I'm encouraged, though, because he said, you know, they've got this great whatever he just said about the flowchart thing, use of force, but also the fact that he said earlier that people are more trained, more prepared, more organized than ever before. That is not what, like I said earlier, it's not what the media would tell us is happening.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, like some of these processes and trainings, you know, is that in the last 10 years, 20 years, 5 years, even the last couple of years, have you seen changes based on, you know, the amount of publicity in regard to police use of force?
So in my department, I would say that our officers have the ability to get a lot. With staffing availability now, that is an issue. That's always an issue across every department. But we have the opportunity to get a lot of training, I think. Personally.
Opportunity or mandated?
So some of it's opportunity, some of it's mandated. Okay. There is certain in-service training that's going to be mandated now. There's going to be, your academy is going to be mandated. That's the academy owns you for several months there if you go with that training. You get done with that training, you get kicked to the field, you're still not cut loose. You're still with a senior officer that's teaching you the ins and outs daily, teaching you the actual how this is done. And then once you're done with that, you're still on probation at that point. And then you're going to continue to get on-job training. So it's not a matter of like, okay, hey, you're done with the academy, good luck. It's, hey, you got done with the academy, and now the real learning starts. And now you can do this.
Right.
So, and that's the idea. It's a lot of departments, I think, a lot of officers that I know personally do seek additional training, especially what they like. I mean, there's some officers that are, they are big into drugs, so they like drug and addiction stuff. They like stuff like that. There's a lot that are into investigations, so they do online computer investigations, in-person interview techniques. There's some that are into, there's some that are good with mental health stuff or crisis stuff, so they do CIT training. It's a 40-hour class, or 40-hour for an entire week, or just learning mental health and active listening and mirroring and stuff, things to help you de-escalate a situation and connect with that person. As, I guess as you'd call it, a tactical empathy or whatever you want to call it. It creates that empathic connection with someone, so you work differently. There's, I mean, any training that an officer wants, a lot of, and again, I'm blessed with the department I'm with. So again, they have a lot of opportunities. But a lot of departments out there have this, or it's available even for smaller departments. Now, time always is an issue. Can I get the time to take class? That can always be hard. But I think they have, even in the last decade, there's been a lot of push for continual training with officers.
I think that's great. I don't think you could get too trained.
No, because if you're not spending time on the beat with some officers, how do you know where the good donuts are? You know, you don't learn that in the academy.
I do know, but I don't get them on duty. I'm just saying.
No, you go to Cinnamon or whatever it is. Get those.
Cinnabon is nowhere around here. That's only when I get to go down south I get that. Okay. I can tell you where the best coffee is, though. So.
You are a coffee person.
Maybe time for one more.
Yeah, I have one more question. Or do you want to go?
No, go ahead.
Okay, because we talked a lot about mental health and this kind of thing. But this is a little bit touchy. It's not personal, but it's touchy because of all the bad press that law enforcement gets and all these things. I think the conversations that people have with their children, especially if they're in a minority community, is different than the way we were taught. We were taught they're the good guys. You always run to them for help, respect, all of those things. And I think the conversation might be different for some people now. What would you say about that?
Has been different for a long time.
Well, it could be.
It has been
right.
for a long time.
Yeah.
But what are those concerns founded, in your opinion? And what would you say to do?
So, a very unpopular opinion, so I'll touch it lightly there. My opinion is that when you can create positive interactions with law enforcement, it is going to be better for those communities, period. But the problem is, what you're going to run into is certain communities where they have higher crime, higher drug problems, things like that. Officers are going to be looking in those areas more. And as a result, there are going to be
more negative,
a higher number.
Yeah.
Negative interactions. Exactly. Because I know there's going to be, I can tell you right now where I work, I can tell you which areas are going to high crime. I can tell you which areas are going to have my drugs. I can tell you all of that stuff. I know which areas where the open air drug deals are going down. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I might look in those areas a little bit heavier for drugs than I'm going to look in, say, some of the other neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Now, to fix some of those negative interactions, in my opinion, we do encourage a lot of community policing. And I like that. It's just go around. Hey, how you doing? I'm Austin Leeser. Nice to meet you. Just talk. I go to schools. I walk through the school. Or pre-COVID, I used to walk through the schools because there was no issue with it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I get to go in a uniform, go to an elementary school, and I sit down and have lunch with the kids.
Yeah.
Didn't matter. Just sit down. Hey, how you guys doing? They'd come up, talk to you. This might be their first opportunity to actually have a positive interaction with law enforcement. And I think nurturing those interactions are going to change how that child's going to react in the future too.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? I met that officer, and this is kind of one of these vicious cycles here. If your only interaction with officers is negative, mm-hmm. and because of that, you're going to be act a certain way with me because your first interaction with law enforcement was negative. Mm-hmm. My response is then going to be, well, every time I deal with that group, they're going to be angry and nasty to me. And this is that vicious cycle. And at some point, people need to stop and figure out, what can I do? Because I can't change what every officer does. No group's going to be able to change what every part of the group does. But it's what can I personally do to help break that cycle?
Each individual.
And that's really what it comes down to. It's that community, that communitas thing. You have to start somewhere. And I hate to say it, sometimes it revolves like, hey, you know what? Sit down. Tell me what's going on. What is your actual concern about this? And I'll do that with people.
Yeah.
Hey, I've had people that say, literally have driven by me and said, hey, F the police, and happened to run into the restaurant. I'm like, hey, man, listen, I'm sorry if I upset you, but is there anything you're actually concerned about? Or is it just you're angry? Why? It's this. Okay, well, man, I've never met you. I'm Nate. Nice to meet you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I've actually had a great conversation with them. I've actually had a few guys that originally had F the police, and you talk to them, and I've run into them since, off duty, and they remember me. Hey, Officer Nate, nice to meet you. Hey, I hope you're doing good. How's the family? Oh. I know my family, but they know I have family.
Yeah.
But it's an awesome thing when you can break that cycle individually, because that's I think comes to the issue too. If I can say it's the police, you're just faceless police. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to think one way. If I can dehumanize any group kind of thing,
sure.
If I can take away your personal. Yeah, if I can take away any personal aspect, it's very easy to just say, everybody is this. And those statements are very bad. And I think officers get bad with it too, because the longer you stay on the street, you become jaded. Yeah. You see a lot of stuff that people shouldn't see.
Sure.
And as a result, I think officers, unfortunately, start compartmentalizing stuff negatively and unhealthy coping behaviors. They become angry. They become jaded. It affects everything, but as a result, they start treating everybody poorly, in my opinion.
It's got to be hard to stay healthy and doing a job like yours. It's got to be really hard to stay mentally healthy, emotionally healthy.
And so
go free diving.
So that's a great thing, but also it does seem like, obviously y'all have mental health services available to you. I'm sure there's some that would be, oh, that's a great thing, and others that would look at it as, you know, we just watched Lethal Weapon the other day. You know, they joke this poor therapist lady that's works for the department the whole time. But, you know, so, you know, there's something to be said for post-traumatic stress, and there's no way that you aren't affected by trauma over and over and over again. So I do feel like it should be some type of mandatory care that's given.
And officers are horrible about it.
Yeah.
Right, I imagine.
Well, same firemen, I think, you know, kind of in that whole first responders field, it's not really the most welcome thing. And another thing that, now, I don't know if you guys do, but there's some, you know, there's chaplains as well that can kind of, you know, maybe it's not just mental health, but it's also spiritual health, or it's kind of connected, all those things.
Of course. But it's holistic to address all aspects of our character.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I love how Nate answered that last question. That was a hard question, and he just nailed that junk.
He did, and he inspired. I mean, I feel like, you know, it's something that we can take in every area, whatever profession you're in, whatever your daily walk in life is trying to avoid those kind of all or nothing types of seeing people.
Yeah.
Being able to look at what we have in common as opposed to what's different about us. So that does kind of segue nicely into, we do a Devo at the end of each podcast. And
he listens. Nate's a listener sometimes anyway.
Yeah, I am a listener.
Yeah. See, we have dude listeners.
Yeah.
Godwaters.
All right, Godwaters. So, you know, I think another group of people who would be put into a category or a box would be prisoners, and or, you know, even all different, you know, drug addicts or whatever. You know, you could make assumptions about people, or well, you've broke the law and you deserve to be there, or whatever. I'm not saying that you don't, but as Christians, we are called. Jesus specifically said, and I'll read it.
What did he say?
He said, you know, I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me, and I was in prison and you came to visit me. And basically what he says is, whatever you do for the least of these, you do for me. And so we are called by our faith to not put these people in a box and forget about them, or not make assumptions that they're not worthy of our attention and our love and our provision.
Well, in that verse, Matthew 25:36, right? There's no indicator about how to decide who the least of these are. You know, Jesus doesn't say, well, if they committed this kind of crime, then maybe you would offer this kind of service to them. If they committed this level of crime, then no, you don't have to visit. He simply says the least of these. Unclothed, you know, sick, imprisoned. So without vast judgment, that's when we're supposed to come in and just serve those people. And, you know, if you've had, if you've been personally affronted, let's say somebody murdered your child, maybe you're not going to be the one to minister to the least of these. You know, maybe you're not going to be the one that's able.
But there are those that have, and
There are those that have, but maybe it's somebody else. Yeah. Maybe it's somebody else's job that might not know what they did, that can just look objectively at somebody in that situation and minister to them.
What do you think, Nate?
I think that wraps it up nicely with compassion being kind of a, redemption and compassion being what's required more than anything else.
Well,
think how much better the world would be.
We've got like compassion. So there's, 2.3 million people are incarcerated every year. And 76% will reoffend and end up back in prison.
That's because marijuana is illegal.
Okay, so in looking at that, there was a really interesting app that I ended up scrolling upon on Instagram. It's called Pando App. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's a app that's been approved. It's all spiritual. It's all sermons and worship music, and they're actually. It's been approved for the prisons. Many prisons are actually giving out little tablets. Like, you can kind of go on this app and donate. You can sponsor a prisoner, $18 a month or something, provides them with a tablet and this app. And it's pretty incredible what the effect that it's having and how it's catching on. Like, I read some of the letters from some of the prisoners who said that, like, you know, they were having conversations with other prisoners like, oh, did you, you know, this guy just released a new sermon. Have you heard it? Mm-hmm. And talking about it. People who have a loved one who's in prison, they can both listen to a sermon and talk about it together, mm-hmm. and or worship music or whatever. And I just think, wow, that would be.
It's a good resource.
It's a really good resource.
A good next step.
And
You know what might, and another thing to take it away, that app sounds great. Maybe we should link to it in our resources.
That'd be great.
But, you know, Nate said compassion and this kind of thing. So as Christians, we already know that that's the path we're supposed to mm-hmm. take. But not every person is a Christian, and not every law enforcement officer is a Christian. But if they're the kind of officer that I'm ascertaining Nate is, mm-hmm. he is the light and the face of Jesus to everybody that he's encountering, which...
Yeah.
What else can you ask for?
That's it.
Yeah.
When you come at them with, you know, not expecting the worst and being open-minded to listen to mm-hmm. whatever's going on in their life, absolutely.
Nailed it.
I want to thank you for your service.
It's hard. We fall short sometimes. So.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
We all do.
Everyone does, as long as you remind yourself.
Oh, yeah. We fall short all the time, right?
Not Ashley.
No, but other people, they do. They do. Let's wrap it up then.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Nate, thank you. You're a better Absolutely. Law enforcement officer than you are a free diver, which is saying a lot.
I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Just kidding. You're good at both. Come back down and visit because Ani loves Will.
Lily is looking forward to coming back down and visiting sometime. I would love to see you guys hopefully in the spring sometime. Like Thanks. I said, the shark dive thing sounds awesome. Ooh. Go do some spearfishing and some shark diving.
Yeah, you better wait till it's warm. Or come to the springs into March with us. That'd be awesome.
So I have my 8 mil suit, so I'm good to go, or 6 mil suit, so I'm good to go.
Yeah, there it is.
Well, thank you, listeners. And check us out on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Go to the website. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts, and we appreciate you.
Yeah. Sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah.
Got some good stuff coming out.
Yeah.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Have a good one.